Welcome back to the Grief Observed podcast. I'm Brad Morrell, your host. And if you want to be on the podcast like our guest today, just send me an email at griefobservedpodcast@gmail.com or check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/griefobservedpodcast. My guest today is Kelly, and Kelly is here to speak a little bit about some of the losses that she's had in her life, as well as some of the things that she's doing thereafter and kind of helping the grief community. And I won't share everything. I'll let her do all of that. So I will bring her on without further delay. Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we first met on Facebook through your group. I was just out surfing, seeing what was out in the grief community, and I fall upon this Facebook group called Grief Bites. Before we go there, why don't you introduce yourself to listeners and just tell us who Kelly is?
Sure. Hi, my name is Kelly Ressman-Horn, and I am from Oklahoma, and I have gone through several losses. And that's why I'm on this podcast, because I want to share what I have learned. And hopefully there's some folks out there that need some love and hope and encouragement. And I want to be the person to give that to them. I'm also a director of coding at Ensemble Health Partners. I'm a YouVersion author and also an author of a book called Singing Through the Storm.
That's awesome, Kelly. And that's another thing that we'll get into a little bit later is the YouVersion. That's one of the things that kind of popped off your page for me. I'm like, wow, I use that app for a lot of Bible readings and different just devotions and things like that. And that was one of the things that really, really struck me about Grief Bites. So let's start with your grief story. Why don't you talk about some of the losses that you've had in life and just kind of catch us up to what actually set your heart in motion for this? I don't know if you call it a ministry, but I certainly do. And,
yes.
You know, so just tell us a little bit about grief in your life and we'll start there.
Okay, that sounds great. So I guess my grief journey started when I was 3 years old, when my first dad was killed by a drunk driver. And of course, I was so young that I didn't really know what was happening. So I'm sure it was a couple of years later before I really began to understand what happened. So once I was able to understand things, of course, your mind thinks about grief. So I've never had a life without grief that I'm aware of, because that's how early it started. And then when I turned 8, my favorite Nana passed away. So that was just a few years later. And then when I was around 20 or 21, my 22-year-old sister passed away unexpectedly. And she left behind 3 little girls. And we helped them navigate through that. But I have to back up for a second. About 30 days before she passed away, my boyfriend passed away. He was paralyzed from the neck down and was in the hospital for a year. So I had 2 deaths right there together, which rocked my world and, you know, caused me to look at different things. So that was about 30 years ago when that happened. And then fast forward 17 years later, I had a second boyfriend pass away unexpectedly. And that was hard. And there's different things with each grief experience. Sometimes you're a full-time student, sometimes you're a full-time worker, and you have all kinds of different things that come into play there. Fast forward to about 2 years ago, that's when my dad, he had cancer, and his cancer returned and he passed away. And then a few months after that, my aunt passed away unexpectedly. The next month, my other aunt passed away unexpectedly. And then this past year, my uncle passed away on my birthday. So there's a lot of things that have happened with grief. It's my life is just filled with, I haven't even told you all of them. My uncle had passed away a year after my sister died, and he came and lived with us with hospice for a few months for his final days. So there's just a lot out there that has happened. So obviously I think, I look at myself a lot to see what I can learn from it. And then also I know that there's other people out there as well that maybe they haven't had as much, but you don't have to have a bunch or a multiple ones or deep ones for it to affect you. And so that kind of turned my heart toward wanting to help others and really just to give them hope day to day.
Yeah, Kelly, one thing I want to ask is when I see someone that's had this much loss in their life, and it is a lot of loss, you know, like you said, there's some people that can go 30, 40 years of life and maybe they've only lost one person. And I think saying only is probably an unfair statement too, right? Each
Sure.
loss is very important to each person and very real to each person. But I am curious, like what are some things that you found in common with each loss, and what are some things that kind of set them apart from each other?
That's a really good question. First of all, I guess I would say each one rocked my world in a different way. I didn't mention the quote unquote lesser losses because they weren't as life altering. But all of these rocked my world where I struggled because I was working full time. And in several of them, I was also going to school. And so being able to find that hope each day, to keep on keeping on with family, with work, with school, and trying to keep it all together. Because even like right now, I'm still grieving the loss of my dad. It hasn't even been 2 years. And, you know, still showing up and still being productive, still caring about people, and still trying to make your life count. So, all of them, I would say the biggest thing that they had in common is that they all rocked my world. And I had to intentionally, I had to allow myself room to grieve. Then I had to think about ways that I was going to survive it and then ways to overcome it. As far as the ones that how they all set I guess how they were different is the one with my first dad, because I was so young. I don't remember. The only thing, there's two things that I remember, and the first one is because my mom told me about it. She said we used to pass the funeral home on the way to church, and I would say, that's where daddy lives. And so, you know, I learned that there's grief that affects people as children. That's a whole nother area that I haven't even gotten into, on the impact that grief can have on kids. So if we have any listeners here today that, you know, they've had somebody in their family that has passed away, it could even be a pet, quite frankly. I mean, that's a whole nother a segment as well. But grief does impact kids, whether they can express it or not. That grief experience probably had the most impact on my life, and I didn't even know it, because my mom, because she kept on keeping on through her grief experience, I was going to learn from her, not from what she told me to do, but from observing. I saw her grief healthy. And so when I would have future losses in life, I would have her experience and the exposure to how she grieved to rub off on me. So even though I was three and this happened, that was probably the most profound grief experience in my life because of how my mom handled it. So that was the first one.
Kelly, one thing that we've talked about on this podcast several times is should kids be allowed to go to funerals? And I absolutely think yes. You know, I've got a almost 22-year-old daughter who ironically is an RN. And death still scares her. Like she doesn't like going to funeral homes. And
Yes.
she said, I blame you and mom for not taking me to more funerals. And, you know, I sit here and think, I think I always gave her the option when she was a kid, but I didn't like force her to go.
Sure.
But I do think it's important that, you know, you see a lot of these, kids that actually grow up in funeral homes. Like there's a family in the city that's right next to me. And I remember when I would go to funerals whenever I was a young boy, I would see these kids going upstairs and mom would have groceries and stuff. And I'm like, this is a funeral home. What is going on here? You know, I can't
Yes.
believe these kids live here. This is, you know, and to me it was scary because you know, I didn't know how to deal with death at that point. But, you know, for those kids, it was absolutely natural because I'm very certain that one of them now is part of that funeral home and has kept that family tradition going. So I feel like, you know, getting kids in at an early age or helping them understand death, you know, even death of I recall my mom talking one time, I pulled the wings off of a butterfly. I'm sorry, I probably should have given people a warning about harm to pet there, but that was probably the first experience of death or finality that I ever had, because mom said, you cried, you wanted me to attach the wings back to this butterfly, and I couldn't do it. And it's death and finality. I think it's very
Yes.
important, and it's great to hear that it did affect you early on, but in a healthy way. It taught you healthy ways to grieve.
Yes, and back to what you were saying as far as should you have your child attend the funeral? And I don't think there's an always or never answer. I think it depends on the circumstances. I like what you said you did. You gave an option. I do think there might be times you may want to strongly encourage if it was a mom or a dad or someone of significance, you might want to strongly encourage. But at the same time, you even have to be sensitive with that because people are traumatized when they even with my dad who just passed away a couple of years ago, we have two or three family members who it's hard, some of them it's hard for them to even go to a funeral home. I have a nephew who it's hard to even come over to our house, because Gramps isn't there and he's older. So there's all kinds of things. And he did go to funerals when he was younger. So I think it's a sensitive topic. I think it's something that would require prayer for sure, but also being sensitive to each child and their needs, because you obviously don't want them to be traumatized either if they go. But I do agree with trying to have some exposure at a younger age and not have that protection, because in life we're going to have all kinds of life challenges, and it may not be a loss, but it may be something just as hard for someone, and they're going to need the tools to be able to learn from it and grow from it, whether it's grief or something else.
Yeah, definitely. And as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking of how grieving has changed just in my 48 years of life, and the way people grieve, whether it is how we conduct, funeral services, or it's amazing. And then, of course, I'm a big fan of looking back at the Victorian era, and I'm still looking for someone. If anybody's listening and is very, very familiar with the Victorian era, I really want to bring them on and just talk about mourning rituals from that time period. But you just think about how things have really changed just in our lifetime, and how people perceive death, how they perceive finality. And I think, especially from a Christian point of view, I see people, I guess, less concerned with the end. And I feel like there should be more concern with the end. Where are we going after this? And I'll ask people who come to my office who are not believers, where do you find your hope? You and I, as believers, we have hope, and I always use 1 Thessalonians 4:13-18 as kind of my staple verse, that we have hope of seeing those that we've lost. What kind of hope do people have without that? It's, I don't know. That's tough. That is tough.
It is, because I know that I even struggle with anger, with grief. I'm not mad at God, but I'm kind of mad at the situation that we're in. But I think if I didn't have Christ to help me through that, I would definitely be bitter. And the whole point of grief is in time with the proper tools to become better and not bitter. And quite frankly, I can only do that with Christ.
My daughter called me last night. One of my best friends in the world, his father was diagnosed with glioblastoma back about 6 weeks ago, and it is just a very, very aggressive cancer of the brain. And she called me last night and she said, "Dad, I'm really struggling. Why does God allow good things to happen or bad things to happen to good people?" And I said, that's a really good question. And I just have to have faith that it is working out to the good of him, right? That this is what he sees, and there is a bigger plan, and we just don't see those parts of it, right? And I don't know, it's just so hard to see, you know, to a grieving friend. How do you say that to him, you know, that, hey, it's this is working out for God's good, you know? And it's it is so hard, and I can't imagine being in his situation. But as believers, that is what we believe, that there is a greater purpose for even the pain. And maybe that's a good segue, and we'll come back to some of these other things, but maybe that's a good segue to say, or to look at, like, what got you started in this YouVersion? And maybe tell people what YouVersion is. There may be some people out there that are like, what the heck is YouVersion? So
YouVersion is an amazing Bible app. I believe it's Bible.com, but if you go to the App Store and you type in the Bible app or Bible, that's the Bible app, and it's through Life Church. A few years ago, my sister and I were involved at Life Church, and we met with the leadership, and we started a life group called Grief Bites. And that's where what we did every Sunday was, anybody who had experienced a loss, they wanted some support, love, encouragement, and some food, we were available to help. And so when we were networking with those leaders, then they mentioned that we should do something for YouVersion. And the reason why we were able to write a plan for that was because my sister, she wrote her book first, and it's called Getting Your Breath Back After Life, or Getting Your Breath Back After Life Knocks It Out of You. Wonderful book. I'm still amazed at how many people on our Facebook page, which is Grief Bites, how many people say it was amazing that it helped them through their grief, and they've read her book several times and her devotionals on YouVersion. It's amazing, and it's helping people. I have to brag on my sister because she started it, and she's the one that said, Kelly, you need to write your book. So I wrote my book. So by the time we had gotten to Life Church, we were already authors. And so on YouVersion, it's people who are either famous or known, or, you know, are, have official ministries and this and that. But because we were authors of these books, then they let us write the YouVersion plans.
Wow.
And so she, yeah, it was kind of cool, because you look on there and you'll see people like Charles Stanley or other greats, and you're like, oh my gosh, our plans are on here with them, which is really cool. But she started it with the Grief Bites devotional, and she, I think it's like a 60-day plan. So she wrote it with people who are grieving, who need something every day in mind. So she's got some devotionals out there. And then I come along, and because, you know, I was working full time and going to school, all kinds of stuff, I just did a 3-day plan, because I'm of the mindset, hey, I'm busy, 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 and I need to have success. I need to start something. And then in about 3 days later, I'm going to give it up or get distracted or move on. So I needed to write a plan for people who are busy and wanted to be able to, you know, check off that list that they completed this plan and it helped them. And so my plan is called Singing Through the Storm. It has over 100,000 completions, but I know it's because it was a 3-day plan and it was one that you could finish versus longer plans. But there are people out there that do have the longer plans. So they're Bible reading plans. And what we've got, several resources out there. It's not just the Grief Bites. It's not just Singing Through the Storm. I think it's Finding Treasure in Hardship, Doubts Revealed, all kinds of things. But it's my sister and or I, and my brother even helped with one of them. And then we share what we've learned. We share some encouragement, and we've got some Bible verses in there too. It's an excellent app. Like I said, we've got the YouVersion plans on there. There's in the next month or two, they're supposed to have some sort of a feature where we can interact more with the people who have read our plans. So we're kind of excited to see about some further developments that they have there on the YouVersion for us.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I always like new resources and things, especially to give to listeners and even people that I meet out in the real world. And it's just good to have that one in my pocket to know, hey, you know, especially for, well, let me ask you before I assume, but is it created mostly for believers, or can anybody jump in on that and feel comfortable?
Anybody can jump in and feel comfortable. I will tell you though, with grief, there are people who are currently mad at God Grief, like you said earlier on asking God why, and you could have stopped it and you didn't, or you didn't heal the person, or why are you allowing it? So usually I find you've got two groups. You have people who are mad at God, or people who maybe are kind of like me. You're not happy with the situation, but you love God and you're going to figure it out with him. The reading plans are for both. So the ones I just ask, the ones that are mad at God, just have an open mind, because he loves you. And he's the one person on earth that loves you more than anybody can or will, in spite of what you have done or haven't done. And you don't, I always tell people, you don't want to kick love in the face. So it's okay if you're mad at him, he can handle it. And you can even tell him you're mad at him. You can even ask why, and you can wrestle with things through him, but just let him minister you and let him love you through it. So for those who are mad at God, please, please, please still read the plans and just tell God, I'm mad, but please encourage me. I need your help and I need hope. But it's for believers as well, because for me, my main audience, the ones that I really want to reach, are the ones who say, yes, life's hard. I've had these losses. And yes, it doesn't happen, or it doesn't last for 6 months. And quite frankly, it's lasting a lot longer than I had planned on it. But at some point, I want to redeem it. I want to leverage it. I want it to make me better. I want it to cause me to treasure those people in my life who are still living, that I can still make memories with. And I want it eventually to cause me to grow closer to God. So we've got two different, I guess, groups of people, but we're trying to reach both, because life is short. And when we all are going to die, we do not know when, but when that happens, you know, we need to make sure that we have a forever home with Jesus. And we need to learn to let this grief cause us to grow closer to him, even though it's very painful.
Yeah, I like the fact that you speak about, you know, attending to those who are still living. And I think that's one thing that really happens often when a death occurs is, number one, the person grieving stops their living process, and then they forget to attend to the relationships that are still in their life. And sometimes I get it. Maybe it's one of those pauses that, you know, I need to just re-regulate and try to understand what just happened here. But I think I have seen people grieve for years where they're grieving so hard over a person that they've lost that they have started to deteriorate with relationships here on earth that are still there. People still longing for relationship with someone. And it's sad.
Yes. Can I say that when I told you my first dad died when I was three, my first dad's parents, it rocked their world. My dad was 29 and had four kids, you know, that were, I think my brother was eight at the time. In fact, there was when I told you my uncle had passed away on my birthday back in May, we saw, they brought over photos and relatives for us to go through. And I actually saw a picture of my first dad's mom, and she was smiling. I had never seen her smile like that the whole time she was alive. And I couldn't believe it. So when you say that, you know, you're so focused on that grief and you forget the living, we never understood as kids why they never came around that much. They did a little bit here and there, maybe 30 minutes at a time, but they never really got over my dad dying. And he died back in like 1975, and they didn't pass away until like about 10 years ago. So they missed out on an opportunity to really invest in us grandkids, but they couldn't really get past my dad dying. So there are missed opportunities. And I will tell you that a few summers ago, I was out in the swimming pool. This thought came to me, and it just stuck out to me ever since. But the thought, or the quote, is this: even though I am grieving, the clock is still ticking, and that's why I keep living purposefully. So for them, if they had the tools back then, if they listened to a Grief Observed podcast or YouVersion reading plans or Facebook or other social medias or other grief books or support groups that you could go to talk to, and if they realized that, hey, I'm grieving, but I still need to make an effort toward my living family members, that would have made a big impact in our lives. It was just a missed opportunity.
You know, I saw a a quote today, and I want to say it was by Ben Franklin. I may have that completely wrong, but it was someone in that time period, some of our forefathers, I guess. But the quote was, some people die at 25, but they're not buried until 75. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. And when I sat with it for a minute, I think it's really speaking
Wow.
about what we're talking about right here. The
Yes.
fact that part of us could die when somebody else does at an early age, and
Yes.
then we forget to keep living. And then finally, we do have our physical death and we are buried. I've said it before on other podcasts, and I'll say it again. One of my quotes that I came up with a couple of months ago is, I'm going to live until I don't. And basically meaning that I want to truly live and capture this life. I don't want to just exist. I'm tired of fearing and thinking the worst. I want to truly live
That's
until
so
I don't.
good.
Yeah.
So good.
So I don't know. I'm going to try to find that quote and maybe post it on my Facebook page. I want to say it was Ben Franklin, but I don't know. That was just really interesting just to
So
think.
good.
People may die at 25, but they're not buried till they're 75. Wow.
It's true. And it was the last few years of my grandma's life when she finally found some purpose and became an ombudsman and invested in other people. But there was, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years that I perceive as wasted. And it really, I don't want to say wasted, but it could have been a lot better spent had she kept living in spite of. She could have done incredible things. She could have reached out and helped other people as well.
Well, Kelly, tell us. I know before we punched record, you were telling me about some poems that you have. I don't know if this is a good place to
Yes.
put those, but I would love to hear some of your poetry.
Yes. So I just have to tell you that I am not a poet and I know it. But I guess when my sister and first boyfriend died so close there together, there was just so much inside that I had to get out. And so I had a lot of well-intentioned people saying, well, at least he's not suffering and all kinds of things. And I'll have to say something on that comment too. I know he's not suffering, but I am. That's how I felt at the time. So, I'm glad for him. He's in heaven, but I'm really more concerned about myself, how I'm going to get through the day. So I had a lot of, I guess, well-wishers. And so there's just so much inside of me that I wanted to get out. And so I ended up writing these poems. And so the first one that I wrote, it's called In Time. And I wrote it probably about 3 months after my sister died. And so it's really interesting to look back now and see the spin that you can tell I want to learn and grow from it. But you can also see that I'm not very happy either. So this first poem, it's called In Time. And it goes like this: Melody, my sister, your daughter. So apparently I wrote this for my parents at the time. Melody, my sister, your daughter, we will miss her very, very much. We won't forget her and we won't stop talking about her. She was a great part of our lives, the camping trips, the weekend trips to Branson, the Precious Moments Chapel, Eureka Springs, and the most recent trip to Disney World, the Skip-Bo games, the Uno games, and oh yes, the Monopoly experience. All the good times and even the bad. Her smiling and laughing, her mischievous moments. And even when she was angry and sad, it all just happened so fast, too fast. All those things we were going to do, all those places we were going to go, and the words we never got to say. We didn't even get to tell her bye. Why her? Why now? Why my sister? We won't forget her and we won't stop talking about her. We are going to cry. 6 months, even a year from now, we will still cry. Some of us are going to be angry for a while, angry at God, the doctors, the whole world, angry that she only lived to be 22, angry that she won't get to watch her three girls grow up, and I do, angry that her time on earth with us is no more. It is true that she is in a better place and we will see her one day. But for now, I am experiencing all kinds of thoughts and emotions I have never felt before. I am angry, frustrated, hurt, and deeply saddened. For you see, Melody is there, and I am here. So please, please let me cry. Let me feel what I am feeling, right or wrong. Don't take my grief away from me. One day through all of this, God's love will comfort me, and it will be enough for me in time.
Wow. Yeah, one of the things that I hear in that is your thoughts on grieving the future, right? The things that should have been. And I always say those are sometimes guilt words. Shoulda, woulda,
Yes.
coulda, right?
Yes.
But it is a true thing that we grieve. We're not just grieving the person that has passed away. We're also grieving what we anticipated as our future with that person. So in a sense, I guess we are grieving a part of ourselves as well.
Yes.
That's
Yes.
hard.
And especially with her three girls, each time when they got married, when they had their first child, when they had their second child, when they graduated from high school, when they graduated from college, my mom and I always talk, and we always say that one of the saddest parts of losing a loved one is you're forced to make new memories, which they don't erase the other ones, but they in time cause some of those memories to fade in the background. And so you're making new ones, but you also kind of want to hold on to the old ones as well, but there's not enough room for all of it. So some of them kind of fade out in the background. So definitely there's some grief there with, especially when it's a family member, there's a lot of history. You know, when I graduated from college, when I got this awesome award or, you know, whatever, and, you know, you wanted her to be a part of it and she's not there. So there's a lot on what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of your first dabble with poetry?
Yes. Yes,
Okay.
It was. So
Yeah.
then, you know, I told you I had a lot inside, so I had to write another one. And what's funny is not the right word, but what's interesting about this one is I called it depression. And now, you know, I look back and really it should have been called grief. But I'll read that one to you too, if you'd like to hear it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Depression, that's what I've got, that empty, helpless, draining feeling. Fatigued, not much energy left within me. Some people don't understand it. Sure, I should be sad about Melody and Rob dying. You know, they were my sister and my boyfriend. But that was in October and November of 1992, 4 months ago. Some would say it's time to start getting over it and just about back to normal again. Time to start getting out more with friends and on dates. Besides, Melody and Rob would not want me mourning over them because they are in a better place. Some say I'm still young and can find another boyfriend. Some say time heals all wounds and it will get better. All good intentioned cliches to help me beat this depression. But it's not that easy. Not when your heart is involved. Not when it is your sister, your 22-year-old sister whom you have grown up with. Not when it is your boyfriend who fought so hard to stay alive after his traumatic car accident, only 3 years after his diving accident. Nobody wants to experience this long-lasting and enduring depression that I have felt the last 4 months. I wonder when, if ever, it will go away. Others who have experienced a deep loss know what I'm talking about. They've been there. They know. But wait. Depression is not a bad thing, you know. You can learn to become friends with it. It can do many positive things for you. I am learning things I never would have learned any other way. The important things, things that are eternal. Knowing my God more intimately, no longer cramming in daily quiet time, Sunday morning church, memorizing scripture and praying to appease my conscience. It's about Jesus Christ, a personal relationship with him, doing everything possible to get to know him in a more intimate way because of his love for me. It's about my family, the people I love, spending time with them, making good memories, not knowing how many days on earth I have to spend with them. So please, my friend, allow me to learn the painful lessons which accompany the loss of a loved one. This never-ending depression, which I long to overcome, it will be okay. I will become stronger and learn to adjust. In time, I will adjust to Melody and Rob no longer being an important part of my life. Though I must tell you something, I will never be the same. I will never be the Kelly you once knew. I will be a stronger person, able to endure much hardship. I will be more sensitive to others who experience deep grief. I will be able to relate to others who experience pain and grief. And finally, I will be able to relate to my Savior, who also suffered much and died on a cross so he could have a personal, intimate relationship with me.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting that you entitled that Depression. And I'm going to take just a second here if I can. I told you this is your podcast before we started, but I'm going to take over for just one second and then I'm going to hand it back.
Sure.
But for people wondering, do I have depression versus do I have grief? I've got something that I want to read, and it's just a few differences between what those two look like. And I think you just absolutely made an awesome segue to that. So I'll first read, you know, something from grief and then depression and just alternate back and forth. So with grief, there is an identifiable loss. With depression, it's a specific loss or it that may or may not be identified. With grief, there's the person's focus is on the loss. In depression, the person's focus is usually on the self, right? With grief, fluctuating ability to feel pleasure, whereas with depression, there's an inability to feel pleasure most of the time. With grief, fluctuating physical symptoms. With depression, there's this prolonged or marked functional impairment. With grief, closeness of others is usually comforting. In depression, that persistent isolation with others and self happens. With grief, you're able to feel a wide range of emotions. With depression, it's generalized feelings of guilt sometimes. With grief, there's self-esteem is usually preserved after the loss. And I could hear some of that with your writings right there. Whereas with depression, feelings of worthlessness and self-loathing are very common. And in grief, thoughts of death are typically related to wanting to be reunited with a deceased person. Whereas in depression, sometimes those thoughts of death are related to feeling that worthless feeling. So there are lots of differences, but the one that really rang out in what I was hearing you read right there was truly, I think there was emotions as well, as a, you know, that wide range of emotions versus feeling stuck, but your self-esteem was very present in that. Whereas I didn't feel you feeling worthless. In fact, you were very hopeful in a lot of, towards the end there in your writings. So just some really, really interesting things. And I think people do confuse, grief with depression. Of course, now from a clinical standpoint, we have prolonged grief disorder, which a lot of people in the grief community hate that. I like it because it's like what you're stating right there. This person, if they are grieving intensely after a year, do I want to mark depression or do I want to say that it is still very specific to their grief?
Sure.
And, you know, the truth is we can still bill insurance, which sounds like a horrible reason to have a disorder, but I can still work with a grieving person and still say that, okay, there may be some depressive symptoms, but this is not depression that we're working with. This is completely driven out of the loss of an individual that, you know, a special person in your life.
Yes.
So anyway, I thought that was a good place to kind of let people know some of those differences and yet still just, I don't know, that it was really neat to hear that you had hope and knew that you had a future still out there, even here on earth.
Well, and I appreciate that you said the differences because with me, like I said, I didn't know what to call it. I had really hadn't experienced that type of intense grief. So I just called the poem depression. But even today, you know, I like to validate people and say, hey, it's okay to grieve. Take the time to grieve. I know society's not comfortable with that. And people don't know how to handle you or what to say or they want to help, but they don't, they're afraid they're going to say or do the wrong thing. And so you start thinking, is there something wrong with me? Do I need help? And some people absolutely do need help, and that's okay. Some people may not need help, but they want help, and that's okay. I will say, and this is something I talk about in my book, is if you're not going to get professional counseling, if you feel like it's more of the grief, but not depression, I always say run to Jesus and camp out in the Psalms, because that's something that I learned in 1992. Well, first of all, in 1991, when my boyfriend was in the hospital for a year, I cried out to God, I prayed, and I journaled for a year, and I was in Psalms a lot. And that was daily, you know, just begging, you know, for him to make it and this and that. But that's a whole separate conversation. But after they died, I had to deal with my faith. You know, I prayed, I fasted, I begged God, will you please heal him? And he said no. And so I knew I had to get to work on my relationship with God, because I had faith and even claimed a Bible verse that he was going to make it, and he didn't. But I also knew it was destructive to get mad at him. And I was way too young to become bitter. I was way too young to stay mad and abandon my faith. I just found it again 3 or 4 years earlier in the way of rededicating my life. So I knew that abandoning God wasn't an option, but I didn't know what to do. Because like you said, in the last 40 plus years, grief was different back then compared to how it is now. More people talk about it now than they did back then. So I knew I wanted to grow closer to God, but I didn't know how. You couldn't just open up any Bible book, and that wasn't going to comfort. I learned that it was the Psalms. When I would see verses like evening, morning, and noon, I cry out in distress, or how long, O Lord, must I have sorrow in my heart? I was like, boom, that's some great verses there, because it validates that if I'm grieving several times throughout the day, all I have to do is cry out to God. That's biblical, that I'm not going crazy if I'm struggling in the evening and the morning and at noon, because I can cry out to God. And then the verse that says, how long must I have sorrow in my heart? That means God knows that I'm not just going to trust him and the grief is gone, that there's a grief process that he and I will, you know, would work through. So I would encourage people who are trying to get closer to God and want to be in the Bible. The Bible app's great. The YouVersion reading plans are wonderful, but look through the Psalms and find selected verses that I say hit the spot, like the ones I just shared with you. And that's how you grow closer to God, because you tell him how you feel, but then you give him a chance to talk to you through the Psalms. So it's a cool deal.
One of my newfound friends that I found through this podcast, Bob Willis, he was one of our first guests on the show. He said something really interesting, and it has stuck with me ever since he was on the show. And he said, let me see exactly how he said it. He said, Jesus stated, blessed are those who mourn, not blessed are those who grieve. And I found that very, very interesting, in the fact that there is this outward process that I believe is truly, truly necessary. And if we hold that in, which grief is kind of those inward thoughts, and mourning is, I guess, the outward appearance of what that grief looks like inside of us. But I just found that very, very interesting. Have you ever heard that before?
I had not.
Isn't that very interesting?
Uh-huh. It is.
So I think it's very important that we do take that time to actually mourn. And sometimes I think mourning can actually be in isolation. Like, people don't have to really see us mourn. But I think just simply crying is one of those ways of mourning. It's an outward appearance of what we're feeling on the inside with grief. So I encourage people to just let those feelings and emotions flow, you know, as opposed to holding it inside. So I think it is a process of letting go, not letting go of the individual. Okay. That's not what I'm speaking of, but letting go of that emotional bondage that we have with grief. So,
yes. And the crying too, because there's a verse in the Bible that talks about how God puts our tears in a bottle.
Yes.
What does he do with those? And he treasures them, obviously. That would probably be a whole nother podcasts on the psychological and physiologic benefits of tears and what does God do with them and why does he treasure them? And it's necessary for healing, even though my personality, I don't like for people to see me cry, but sometimes grief is so intense, you can't help it. And it is what it is. And I have had to learn that it's okay for other people to see me cry.
It is. And, you know, you were just talking about the effects of crying. I can't ultimately tell you why God keeps those tears in a bottle, but I'm almost certain it's either in Psalms or Proverbs. I'm not sure. I just read that literally this past week. I was speaking to a client about this because I'm going to jump back to the Victorian era here. My ADHD is kicking in. I should have had more coffee.
I love it.
But in the Victorian era, they actually had these tear bottles where when people would be at someone's funeral, they would hold these bottles up to their eyes and collect their tears. And then they would actually hand those to the grieving family. And,
really?
Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly what they did with them at that point, but it was like a symbol of, I have grieved for this individual. But here's the really cool thing physically about our bodies. And if you're not a believer, this is one of those things that is not coincidence. And it shows you just how thoughtful and intelligently made we truly are, but how thoughtful God is to give us this. So there's three types of tears that we have. There's basal tears that lubricate our eyes when we blink. There are reactionary tears, like if we're cutting an onion or we get a piece of sawdust in our eye and we're trying to clear that. And then there are tears of emotion. And inside those tears of emotion is a neurotransmitter called leucine and Cephalin, which is a painkiller. So when people try to prevent themselves from crying, it's like, why would you do that? Your body literally is stating, I need soothing. Don't stop it. Let the tears flow. And I'm just thinking, wow, like anybody that believes in evolution, how that is just so intelligently designed. Our bodies are trying to soothe themselves, you know?
I did not know that, and more people really do need to know about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. I just, whenever I found that, I'm like, oh my goodness, it's no wonder. How many people in your life, and you've probably said this before too, Kelly, I need a good cry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
privately.
Exactly. You don't want people to see that, right?
Yes. No ugly cries.
Yeah. But that's why we feel better. You know, it crying doesn't change the situation ever, right?
Mm-mm,
mm-mm. I'm sure there's a lot of kids that would beg to differ, right? If I cry, maybe I'll get my way.
Yeah.
But overall, crying does not change the situation. But wow, do we ever feel better for just a few moments?
Yeah,
so
I like
don't
that.
Don't hold those tears back.
I like that. And I know we haven't talked about it, but I did want to go ahead and talk about a little bit about something I learned, the five stages of growing through grief. Do we have time to talk about that?
Absolutely.
Okay. I think most people, at least if they're in the healthcare field, they've heard of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief. And, you know, my mom told me about that growing up. She read the books and all since she had, you know, gone through the loss of my first dad. Well, I was familiar with them as well. And I read them. And okay, that was fine. Set the book aside. Years later, when I realized that, wow, I really need to like learn from my grief, leverage it, make my life count. I thought, you know, we really need to grow through grief. I wish there was like five stages of growing through grief. There wasn't. Now, her stages of grief were great because they tell you, and I know you're very familiar with them, I'm sure.
Yes.
But they tell you what you're going to experience, right? Okay. Well, I sat down one day. People had told me all my life, you know, I should write a book on grief, or I should write a book on my stories, mm-hmm. you know, things that have happened and all. And I'm not a writer. I'm a speaker. You know, I like to talk. Well, I sat down one day and I said, okay, Lord, my sister's written a book. She told me I should write a book. People have said I should write a book. I don't even know where to start, you know, but I did know that I didn't become bitter. I became bitter because of him. And I knew that that's why. I knew that was my source. So I said, Lord, you're going to have to help. What did I do? You know, you're going to have to show me what steps I took so I can help other people know what steps they can take. Because I know that we've got some listeners tonight or today, whatever time you're listening to this, that are grieving. And they also want to grow from their grief at some point. It's not something you can just say one magical prayer, take a pill, and boom, you're growing. It doesn't quite work that way. So I asked the Lord, I said, you're going to have to show me, what did I do? And so he showed me what I did. And I turned that into the five stages of growing through grief. So I'm going to share what they are. The first one is grieve the way you want. And you can tell in my poems that I wrote, I was practically like trying to tell people, please, like begging, please just let me grieve. Just let me figure this out. Let me grieve. So that was number one, grieve the way you want. Some people do it privately. Some people do it publicly. Some need a support group. Some listen to podcasts. Some will read a book. There's all kinds of different ways. Just grieve how you want, as long as it's not destructive. Number two, we talked about it earlier in the podcast on Ask God Why. Oh my gosh, this is my favorite. I kid you not. This is my favorite stage of growing through grief on Ask God Why. We were raised that you don't ask God why. And I beg people to ask God why and in the right spirit. The way I explain it is the pain is so deep, you don't know what else to say. So you just say why. I know I will never get an answer. And I'm not really asking for a specific answer. He's never going to say, you know, I had this person die because of X, Y, Z. He is God. I'm not. He doesn't owe me an answer. And even if he told me, I'm going to disagree and I'm never going to like the answer, because why couldn't they live a few years longer? Okay. So you have to ask God why, because that means you are bringing the conversation to him. If you start asking him why, before you know it, you'll probably get in the Bible. And if you can get into Psalms, then you're going to let him speak to you and you're going to hear him talk to you while you're reading those verses as you're thinking through things in your mind. So I like to tell people, ask God why, because that means you're starting the conversation with the answer. You're looking for the answer, but you are at least jump-starting. You're having the conversations with the answer, because you can't survive, have hope, or grow from it until you're at least conversing with the answer. I will tell you one time, though, at a Grief Bites dinner, we had a man come, and it was probably 2 or 3 weeks after his teenage son had died. And he was like shaking his fists mad at God. Like, I had to pray my sister wasn't going to say something, but I knew it was just the pain. He didn't know what else to do, but it also sounds a little sacrilegious. So I was just praying my sister wouldn't say anything, because he was just venting, and it, I don't know, probably would have set him off if we had said something. She was quiet. We didn't say anything and we hadn't talked to him again, but it's not in that spirit of shaking your fist at God. It's out of desperateness, out of pain. So that's number two, ask God why.
I'm going to throw in something there too. And I love asking why, and specifically to God. I think that's absolutely fine. I heard somebody a while back give an acronym of why, and they used the word who to start it out, but I'm going to say who or what. And they said three things: who or what hurt you, who or what helped you, and who or what healed you. And I'm like, wow, when we ask why, those are some really, really good questions to take that why a little bit deeper, you know. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in grief, obviously we can say the loss of a loved one, that's the why, or what hurt me. Then what helped me? You know, okay, podcasts. We'll throw that one out there. There's books, there's therapists, there's grief coaches, there's, you know, a multitude of things. There's family members, friends, grief groups. You know, there's a multitude of things that can help. And then you're left with what healed you. Now, I realize that's a question that may be further down the road. You may not be there yet.
Sure.
But I think those are really good questions to kind of peel back the layers of why. Why did this happen?
That's really good, because so many people want to react to the person that's mad at God and they want to fix them. And they're really, it's just a heart crying out. It's just a hurting heart.
Sure.
And they need hope, and really they need a friend who's quiet and will listen and be there for them through the journey. Oh, I love that. That's so good. Okay. So number one was grieve the way you want. Number two was ask God why. Number three was keep living. And you had talked about this before.
Yeah.
And that's the hard one. Underneath that section in my book, one of my bullet points below it is get out of bed every day.
Period. Yeah.
Sometimes for people, if that's all they can do for the day, they got up out of bed, I'll celebrate with them, because for
Yes.
some people it's devastating, or they don't have the tools, or they don't have the support system. They don't have resources or hope. So if they don't do anything else but just get up out of bed today, that's a start.
Yes.
And then the fourth step is reach out to others who are grieving. And this is so important. So my boyfriend back in 1992, he died on October 28th. His funeral was on Halloween. And I told you my sister died a month later on Thanksgiving. So between Halloween and Thanksgiving, that's all the time my boyfriend's parents had to grieve over the loss of their 24-year-old son. We didn't have cell phones back then. We didn't have social media. Somehow, they were told that my sister died. And when we got home from the hospital about noon on Thanksgiving, about 30 minutes later, someone knocked at the door, and we were wondering who that could be. And it was my boyfriend's parents offering their sincere condolences to us. And
Wow.
that touched me because they had just lost their only son. And not only that, he had been in the hospital for a year, up and down. Is he going to make it or is he not? And surgeries and this and that. And I knew they were physically exhausted. They stayed up there with him all the time. And here they were reaching out to me. That was back in 1992, like 30 years ago. And I can still remember it like yesterday, and it still touches my heart.
Wow.
So I think that whenever we're grieving and we're hurting, those around us know we're hurting. So it's more valuable, and it means so much to people that even though you're hurting, you took time to encourage other people.
Yeah.
And it's part of the healing process. Number four was reach out to others who are grieving. And then finally, the last step is sing it loud and proud. That's my favorite. So my book is called Singing Through the Storm because I still have God, family, and professional growth. Singing Through the Storm. So I spent hundreds, probably thousands of hours at the piano just singing praise songs to God. A lot of times through tears, a lot of times you start singing and then you can't sing the second verse because you never know, how it's going to hit you. But so half of it is because of the music, just singing to the Lord. But the other half of it is learn from everything. So our listeners, whatever grief, whatever life challenges you're experiencing today, this month, this year, learn from it. Learn from it all. Absorb everything you possibly can. And then when you do, have a time of reflection and write down some of the things that you've learned from the losses. The reason why is those lessons came at a high price, a very, very high price. They cost you sleepless nights, a lot of tears. It rocked your world. So don't let go of those lessons. Hold on to them and sing it loud and proud and apply it to the rest of your life. And what I mean by that is I'm very, very stingy with my time. I always say be ruthless with your time. So unless, like my book says, unless you're God, family, or a growth opportunity, or God has brought you across my path, I treasure my time because I learned that at a high price with the tears. I'll tell you one other example to really bring this home. When I have another sister on earth and one in heaven, obviously we've talked about that. Well, when my sister died, I compare it to my right arm was amputated. Okay. The rest of my family and my other sister, I still have that arm. Well, if you ever know anybody that has lost an arm, a limb, or whatever, they treasure and have to heavily rely on the other arm or their body parts that do still work. So I learned that when I was like 20 years old. I'm over 50. So I have applied that all through my life to be ruthless with my time, and it's family first, family above everything, because I learned that at a high cost. Other people, it may not be that. It may be, hey, I'm 50 years old now and I've just been living for myself. Or I'm 50 years old now and I'm just so tired after work every night. I just turn on the TV and veg and that's all I want to do. And maybe it's time to start thinking, hey, this is not a dress rehearsal. I only have one chance at life. I need to do something with my life. I see the guitar in your background. It could be somebody who may need to pick that guitar back up. Start writing again. Start performing again. Start writing songs for your wife, your kid. Play at church. So it could be different things, but everybody has things they can learn from their losses. And whatever that is for that person, God gave that to you for a reason for us to apply it to the rest of our lives. And so that's stage five, where it says, sing it loud and proud. And these five stages of growing through grief, those are the steps that I took. It didn't come all at once. Anger was involved. Sadness was involved. Emptiness was involved. It came at a price, but that's the steps that I took to become better, not bitter. But I will say I'm going through it all again, and it's fresh with, you know, my dad just passed away 2 years ago. So I'm still in those stages now that I'm starting to work through again.
Yeah. Kelly, I appreciate you being on the show. And, as I stated before, before we started recording, I wanted to give you any final words or any thoughts that you want to, just kind of wrap us up here, and anything that you think we missed. And also, like I stated before, we may have to do a part two at some point, bring you back on, because I think we could probably go on with many other thoughts. And wow, this hour flew by.
It did. And I would love to. I have so much to talk about on grief and hope. And I guess to leave any parting words for our listeners today or tonight, I would say, if you are grieving, be easy on yourself. I have to say that to me too. Be easy on yourself. Be patient. These things take time. It's okay that you're grieving. When you mentioned the difference between grief and depression, I would assume some of our listeners saw themselves in the grief category. And I assume some of them saw themselves in the depression category. If you're in the grief category, run to Jesus with the Bible, camp out in the Psalms. If you're in that depression category, go get help. There is no shame in getting help. We all need help. It's just a matter of how we're going to get it. Is it going to be through the Bible? Is it going to be through getting that professional help? And they're trained and they will listen and they can give you the tools that you need. So I would say, love yourself, be easy on yourself, get the help you need, whether it's for grief or whether it's for depression. And then I would also say, please run to Jesus. If you're mad at him today, please, please pray and ask him to help you get unmad at him. He loves you more than anything else. He's our hope. And I want our listeners to be in heaven with us, where we can actually see them in heaven and say, hey, didn't I see you on that podcast, or didn't I hear you, or I was listening to that podcast? I want to see our listeners in our forever home with us. So I would encourage people to run to Jesus. And if you're mad, just work through that with him, because he cares about you.
That's a great point, Kelly. There was something I saw recently, probably about a month ago. The internet does have some good things out there. You know, we give it a lot of grief on just all the garbage out there, but there are some good things. But it was, somebody had a meme and it said something like, I hope when I get to heaven that Jesus says, hey, there's somebody here I want you to meet, and it's because of you.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, oh, wow. Exactly. You know, and I hope that maybe this podcast does touch someone for the first time. And like you stated, I know God's will is that all would be saved. Yes. And, you know, there, if you can hear this, there's still time, right?
Yes, absolutely. So,
Kelly, thank you so much for being here. And listeners, thanks for tuning in here on the Grief Observe podcast. If you've been touched by Kelly's story, I'll have her information in the show description, as well as a link to her Facebook page. And please reach out to her if you connect with her. And if you want to be on the show as well, just like Kelly was today, contact me at griefobservepodcast@gmail.com. I hope everybody has a great rest of the day or evening, and we'll catch you next time.